All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hi, I'm Virgie Rodriguez here with A Race of Your Own Season 2, where we talk about how inspiration leads to resilience. And today's guest and this week's guest, I'm really excited to have. He is an experienced programming executive and producer. He served as an executive producer for shows on Amazon, Netflix, and Telemundo at 17 years old. Okay. He co-created a public access variety show called Illegal Interns, where he championed local bands and artists from Latino LA, as well as leading in the exposure of Latin alternative music in the 1990s. He has been EVP at Big Vita Entertainment, where he oversaw production along with and produced with Eva Longoria the ALMA Awards. And he has been a top executive producer at NBC Universal's Telemundo at Mundos, where he worked on a network series called I Love Jenny. Welcome to the show, Flavio Morales.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome, Flavio.
Muchas gracias.
De nada. We're going to do Spanglish because I'm like, you know, it's Hispanic Heritage Month. We're going to do Spanglish. So the people that learned Spanish in high school still have their textbooks. Mm-hmm. Pueden follow along.
There you go.
Pueden follow along. Your career is like amazing and it's very inspirational in the sense of like, because I kind of come from that same mentality of like this guerrilla filmmaking, right, world. And I watched your speech, your TED Talk that you did, where you talked a lot about your project when you were 17, illegal Interns. Can you talk to us a little bit about kind of like what led you to that?
Thanks for inviting me to talk and share with you.
But, you're a legend, Flavio.
Yeah, in my own mind.
You're a legend.
My parents came to this country a year before I was born, young, they were 23. And growing up, we were sort of, I got introduced to American culture and my own culture through television. Like my best friend, the running joke when I was 6, 7, 8 years old was that I could tell you what was on every channel of the TV at any given time. Like, I was the dork.
You were the TV guide.
I was a TV guide. Yeah. And so I always, like, was just very passionate about it. I didn't know what it was. But
Did you have a favorite show?
Siempre en Domingo.
Ooh.
Growing up was, it was a variety show. And it was just, a little bit of everything. And and that always sort of was there. I never really pursued it. Like, how do you pursue it when you're from East LA? Like, you don't really. But my senior year in high school, my parents got cable and
changing the world.
Yeah, totally. And flipping through the channels, there was like this community channel and the guy on it was talking about like, hey, if you're in high school, you can intern here. I didn't know what the word intern meant. Called the number, said, come down next week. I go in there and it's full of 20 something year olds. There's a show. It's like a radio show, but with video, like a community affairs screen on. Mm-hmm. And I meet the guy. His name was Artis Barza. And I remember distinctly in his office, he graduated from UC Santa Cruz. And he was like, look, we can show you around. You're going to learn stuff. And it's a really good experience for you. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, we'll see you next week. Come here at, after school at 4:00. And I was like, oh, I got a job. So I go home and I tell my parents, I got this job at this place. Really? That's great. Like, how much does it pay? I'm like, I didn't ask. And I go the next week, and they introduce me to the guy that I'm going to be working with, picking up cables and doing sorts. His name was Richard Estrada. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, what is this job paying? He goes, aren't you an intern? He goes, yeah. And he goes, interns don't get paid.
You're like, what?
And I'm like, oh, but see, this is where I feel so blessed. My parents didn't send me out looking for a job. Right. They just sent me out, like, go find something that you want to do. So when I came home, and then my parents were like, oh, es un aprendiz. Mm. And they were like, oh, it's like to learn. So that's okay. My dad was a truck driver. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. And their whole thing was just don't get in trouble. That was literally like the prerequisite to living a happy life at the Morales family.
Right.
Was don't get in trouble.
Right.
And I wasn't a great student, but my parents were just like, you don't never get in trouble. You're good kids. Like me and my brothers at 13, they bought us a video camera, which was not very common.
Wow.
And again, it's like make little movies, do your thing. Like they were young enough to be like, be cool. And they both had a very tough upbringing. So like, it was like, they were already manifesting, like, we want to give you a better life than what mm-hmm. we had.
Mm-hmm.
So again, positive, we weren't, we were all productive. So the moment that I started interning and started to do work in the community, my parents were like, take your brothers along. Like, make that a thing.
You're like, make that happen.
Yeah. And so that happened. And there were so many things that came out of illegal interns. I got my first job in the music industry. I got a job in advertising as a consultant. We all found our niches. My brothers worked in theater.
Wow.
My friend Richard produced other shows, became such a really cool tastemaker. So that show, which was at the end of the day, was a 13-year experience because we did it off and on.
In and out
for 13 years.
Wow.
And that was really like, I was like, that's where I learned to like write a press release. We met a coffee shop owner who happens to be Beck's stepdad, who was part of this art group, Osco, that was like our mentor. And so it was like, he goes, you shoot in a studio, why not shoot in a location? And we're like, okay. And it's like, shoot in my coffee shop. And we did our first event and we got a weekly pick in the LA Weekly because he taught us how to take a press release and take a picture. Wow. And then we got into like what Los Angeles Magazine used to do, like the coolest people in LA. We were featured. And it was just these like
moments.
People all around us that were very supportive. And then as we kind of grew up and started getting jobs, I was sort of like, I really like this. I'm going to pursue this. So I worked, like I said, publicity and music. I worked in advertising. I worked as a publicist. And all of those things built up to a point where someone said, hey, we want to take a risk with you and try something. So mm-hmm. by the time I was 20, before I got married, 26, I was working at Wieden & Kennedy, which is a really big agency out of Portland, Oregon, working there. And then they offered me a job to help them start a cable network called LA TV. And that's kind of where it all kind of started again.
And LA TV is like huge. Like, yeah. And the programming was just, amazing. I think the fact that your first show was Illegal Interns, like a play on words there, right?
Yeah, the funny thing is we never intended it to be political. It literally was the first day that we were told to do a show.
Mm-hmm.
The general manager, Art, had a conference call. So he says, keep it down. So we had a whisper. So when we were doing the intros to the music, we're like, all right, so we snuck in and we're being told that we have to keep it down. So we're kind of illegally here. Second show, we're like, oh, Illegal Interns.
That's great.
And then fast forward to like Proposition 227 and 187, then it took a different meaning.
Right.
Where it was like more of a political. But yeah, like our attitude for myself, my brother Oscar, my brother Efrain, and Richard was like, we were going to do things our way. Mm-hmm. We would sneak into places. You mm-hmm. know, we would cut corners where we needed to. I love sharing the story because like one time we got offered concert tickets, right? So mm-hmm. they're like, okay, we'll give you guys a pair each so you guys can be in the front row. And we're like, instead of the front row, how many would you give us if we were all the way in the back? And they're like, all right, we'll give you like 20 tickets so we could take the whole crew. And it was like, that was the hustle that we all kind of had.
Yeah.
And then we just started gaining support. Local artists like Osomatli and Quetzal would you know, participate and do stuff with us, and spoken word performers like Maricela Norte and Ruben Martinez. Yeah. And we just started reaching out to magazines that were covering, like Al Borde and La Banda Elástica and Frontera. And same thing, there was an East Coast magazine.
All big magazines.
Yeah, for our community. Yeah. So we would all sort of partner and work together.
You even do East Coast magazines too.
We were working with them because we would figure out a hustle to get ourselves to New York, or figure out a hustle to get ourselves to Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And so little by little, like, we started to do it. And with LA TV, well, the first time I went to South by Southwest, my wife, we paid for her ticket, and she was my camera person.
Oh, that's great.
So Laura was like camera person as our first like South by South, because they could only afford to send me.
Right.
And she was like, well, I'll go and I'll do your camera. And I was like, great.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So it was all of these really cool opportunities, and it's how you hustle it, right?
And I feel like that's where we are now.
Still.
And you mentioned something about like having a mentor, right? And especially in the Latino community and telling our stories, right? And being specific. And you didn't just keep it here. Like you said, like, we would hustle it to try to get to Miami. We would hustle it to try to get to New York, because you knew that there was still a Latino community in all those areas, right? So how important was that in your career, right, at the time? And do you think it's like, it's different now? Or is that still very prevalent for you, where you're like, well, I had a mentor, so now I'm also reaching back?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Sean Carrillo, who was like really, you know, I was 19, mm-hmm. you know, and he sat me down and was like, this is how you do things. This is the process. This is like, you need a picture of the, you know. And he was really instrumental of like, I remember we were at a party, and his and his wife, Bibi Hansen, who was a prominent artist as well. Mm-hmm. Like, when you go to one of these parties, you're feeding yourself. So instead of grabbing one appetizer, you grab five, make it look cool. And right. always make sure you're working the room and introduce right. yourselves. Don't right. be afraid. Don't stay in the corner. You want to get invited to one of these things again. And it always stuck. But Sean was really incredible. I remember when I was doing LA TV, I get a phone call one day, and it was a gentleman by the name of Bob Mendez. He's like, hey, I was watching the show and I thought it was really great, and just curious to like know a little bit about you. I'm like, great. Well, he was like a head of business affairs at Paramount Pictures. So he invites me to lunch, and we're walking around the set, and like we're walking around sets, and he's like, yeah, like, this is what you can do, and this is what it is. And it was so funny, because when I left LA TV to go to Telemundo or NBC, mm-hmm. well, I didn't have a lawyer. Like, I didn't right. even, like, how do you negotiate a deal? Like,
right. And ChatGPT didn't exist, so no. It's not like you could upload it.
And so, like, right. immediately they're like, well, when they offered me the job, they're like...
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
So what's the name of your attorney that can reach out and start doing the paperwork? And I was like, oh, I'll get it for you.
You're like my dad.
So like, I call Bob and I'm like, hey, I'm like really lost here. And he's like, oh, let me call my friend Vance. And I'm like, okay. Well, Vance Van Patten, who wound up till like recently running the Producers Guild of America.
Yeah, I'm like, that's a big name. I know that name. Yeah.
was my lawyer for like, wow. I don't know how many years, and at a like homie discount, right? So it wasn't like whatever. And I was just like, well, I don't have that. At that point, I didn't have that Rolodex to be able to be like, oh, let me call so-and-so. Like, it was one guy to be like, hey, you talk to this guy. And this is the way it works.
I feel like from hearing what you're saying, it's like, it's such a peers. Mm-hmm. Having people around you, you're at this party and they're like, make sure you take more appetizers, make sure you this. And they're like guiding you. But it felt like a sense of peers where now, and maybe as a woman, it feels a little different sometimes being a little ambitious at a party or at an event and being like, hey, I have this thing or I have this thing. It's looked at a little different. I feel like to me, it's been a little lost because it doesn't feel like the sense of peer anymore. It feels like this sense of me, and that's a great idea. I'll go do it. Thanks. You know what I mean? And it's more of like, well, you're just a fan, you know, you're not a peer. That sense of actually having a community and sense of peers that want to uplift and they see something in you and they're maybe already at the top or whatever and are really like, no, Flavio, you should do it like this. You should do it like this. It's like, it's a blessing, right? But it's also just like this sense of actual community and peers.
Well, like I said, I started in the 90s and there just wasn't enough of an opportunity. So it was like crabs in a bucket because there just wasn't enough. And I think that one of the things that allowed me to like, I wasn't a threat because I came from DIY. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I'm a filmmaker. It wasn't like I'm like a theater person. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a band manager. So like people were like, oh, it's okay. It's not a threat. Right. Like, he's not going to take what I have.
Right.
But I saw, I mean, there was, I remember there is a very cool black conference that started to allow other groups to come in. And you could only get invited. You couldn't request to get in. It was invite only. And there was no guarantee you get invited again. So it's like a one-off. And I remember the first year I got invited to this thing, super swanky, like just like it's only 100 executives of color in the room. And I walk in and I see people that I know. And they were all like, hey, kind of like, how the hell did you get in here? Like, hey. Right. And I was like, well, this is really weird. Yeah. And I remember going to the organizers of the event after I actually ended up going for like 10 years in a row. After the second year and be like, hey, how do you get the list of people that get invited? And he goes, oh, by the people in the room. Like, you could submit people to invite. I'm like, well, that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
So I'm like, here are some names, like here. Yeah. And it got to the point where I literally said, like, if I'm taking up a space from someone that should be here, here's five people that should be here.
Wow.
Just because it's like, you get what you can and you gotta like,
give back.
Well, the people that you see up are the people you see down, right?
Say it again, Flavio.
Yeah, no, but you know what? It's very humbling because, you know, 3 years ago, you know, my contract wasn't renewed at Endemol. I was, you know, and that was like the first time ever that I didn't have a personal assistant, that I wasn't working with a corporate company. Where and you see the phone ring less and the invites come less. It just so happens that when I learned that I wasn't returning, I still got invited to this like swanky event. And the head of Netflix, Bella Banjari, I believe her name is, gave a speech. And it was amazing because she talked about how when she got fired from NBC and she was just like, she goes, overachiever my entire life, and then I get fired,
right?
And my peers call and it's like, now you're officially part of Hollywood. You can't work here and not be fired,
right?
No one does that.
Oh, I know the feeling.
And she said, and they told you, keep a mental note of those that check in on you and those that don't. And I remember I was like, oh, that person didn't call me. I haven't heard from
And I hear.
Yes. But I was pleasantly surprised to find people calling me and like, hey, Flavio, let's go have drinks.
Nice.
What's up with you? Like, what do you want to, like, people genuinely taking the time to ask me, what do you want to do next?
And those are your people.
And I was like
that's, and those are your peers.
And those that I didn't really value or like kind of are in your periphery, but are like, I'm like, shit, I will always do right by you. I'm always going to look out for you. I'm going to bring you into my home. I've never thrown like a party for people. And my wife one year is like, you owe a lot of people. Thank you. Let's have a little gathering with those people. And I had, you know, these people that took the time to check in. And I was like, random agents. I'm like, hey, I heard you're out of Endemol. I'm like, yeah. You good? Right. I'm like, oh my God. Like, thank you. Like, yeah, you're a good guy, man. Like, and it's.
You're a good person. Like, that's what I mean about peers. Like, just a community. Like, you're just a good person. Like, you're just a good person. Like, I like you. I like working with you. Whatever that relationship was, right? It's like having a sense of community, having a sense of peers. And it's okay. And it's not a facade. It's not an illusion.
Well, and I can tell you, the biggest difference from the 90s to today is because...
And maybe it was the time.
It was the time because there were no other outlets, right? You're either a broadcaster, basic cable, or you're making a movie, right? Like... Really, that's what it was. So I think now, and I say this to, like, you know, there's the Bahia Club and Nalip, and there's all these like organizations that are always sort of supporting each
like
other.
Outreach.
Yeah. And it's different because, like, you really want to start talking to people, do a podcast.
Right.
You really want to do something, shoot a short film, put it on YouTube. Right. And it's a very different vibe. Not to say that it's not cliquish, because it all is. But
it's all cliquish.
Yeah. But it's there's a really honest to goodness opportunity for everybody to get the word out. You know, you just got to work it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a strong community in Miami, strong community in New York. You know, there's even people that pop up in the Midwest. So, and then there's stronger relationships globally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go do something really cool in Spain and Mexico, obviously.
Right.
But like even...
Dominican Republic, which is where my family is. Well, like, there's tons of podcasts there.
No, and then just like the government.
Puerto Rico.
The government is helping. I feel now that there is a little bit more of that. And I think that we're not just like one-offs in pop culture. So, you know... What Bad Bunny has been able to do and what regional Mexicans would have been able to do, you know, headlining Coachella shows. So it becomes a much richer opportunity for everybody. And it's not these limited slots.
Right. And the net is what you can cast that wider net kind of thing. Right. And tell our stories from that perspective. I do feel like on the more of a global stage, there's still a narrative that's being portrayed, right?
Yeah.
Which, you know, neither here nor there, because there is so many of us. I pulled up the GDP, right, of 2023, and it was like $4.1 trillion for Latinos in the U.S. that we've given to the economy, right? And so I think, you know, and not to get too political, but like even just like the ICE raids and stuff like that, it's watching stuff like that is just so frustrating, you know, because it's just like, how are we still here, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I think if anything, it's made people understand that there is a system, and that system doesn't want us, or they only want our food, or they only want our songs, but they don't want us.
And a certain image, because a Latina, right, an Afro-Latina, right, it's like you know, Carmen Miranda is an image I'm trying to stay away from, you know, but, and I'm not necessarily calling her out, but, you know, seeing Carol G wear pineapples on a bra is like, have we gotten anywhere as just Latino culture and then the world stage, right? So it's like, well, that's what we're trying to stay away from. So why is it still at that level?
I wish, you know, that we had the opportunity to like have it all out, right?
Right.
So you can have the coconuts and the pineapples, but then... have
and like, the bongos and the Ricky Ricardo,
yeah, but right. Like also have like really strong storytelling,
right,
that is talking about, you know, literature and independent film and
thank
like
you.
And it sucks because like we only get to fill a particular story, right? Like
immigrant, drug dealer.
Yeah,
but at the same time, drug dealer or a prostitute.
Yeah, but
you know, for women,
I think that's where, like, hopefully YouTube and right. just Instagram and
TikTok. Well, we'll see what happens with TikTok.
Or even the you know, short form storytelling, mm-hmm. right? Which is in its infancy. But mm-hmm. like, I keep telling people, if it costs $100,000 to tell an hour's worth of these short forms, that's not scary.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not $3 million.
Right.
So what if we are able to find stories and narratives that we know are going to be good for 700,000 people or whatever? I mean, you look at the way Napster changed music, and I have a lot of friends that are in bands, and they're like, yeah, we found our niche. We found our niche, and we know how to make a living, and we know how to work it, and we know how to go on the road, and they're... So we all have to learn. I think the biggest difference is that we used to think, oh, a studio has to discover me. Or I'm going to sell a story to the streamer and they're going to, like...
It's not like
you
that
can
anymore.
Go that route. I mean,
right.
when I did, like, Water for Chocolate, which is, you know, arguably one of the most recognized...
I love how you just throw books. That out there. You're like, you know, when I just did Water for Chocolate, like, no, but hello, like, Flavio.
The story with that was when I landed at Endemol...
That was alongside Selma Hayek, yes?
Yes. So our CEO, Chris Abrego, and the head of Scripted said, pick a story that you think we could develop to do for international. Mm. And I brought Amores Perros, and they suggested, like, Water for Chocolate. I went after, like, Water for Chocolate. We got the rights, took us... about a year, very expensive for what it was.
Right.
And I had change at administration with work. And
you've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
The person that came on board was like, I know the name, but like if you and I walked two blocks, no one would know the name. And right. I was like, but that doesn't matter. We're walking in right. North Hollywood and hello. No one's going to read.
No one's going to read.
And so, but from getting the book to literally first day of production took 7 years.
Right.
And of those 7 years, Salma Hayek was riding shotgun with us for two years of that.
Right.
So we had a big book, Salma Hayek, and it still took
a long time.
Years.
And she's done great work too. Like, she did Frida, but she also did a Dominican story from a book called In the Time of the Butterflies, mm-hmm. right? Which it's like, I watched it with my family in DR, and they were like, "That's not accurate." I'm like, "It's Hollywood. Like, get with it." Like, I'm like, "Stop."
Yeah, we're not. We don't make Hollywood doesn't make documentaries.
Right. Unless it's a documentary. Yeah. But you know, so she's been kind of in that sense when it comes to those types of storytelling, mm-hmm. like that stronger storytelling, right? You know, and it's a process, right? So if you're saying it took you 7 years from the moment you got that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
those rights to that book to actually go shoot it, and you still had a big name attached, a few big names attached, like, imagine a smaller, you know, an independent filmmaker, right? Because it seems like, and I've had, who I talk about all the time on this podcast, producer Patrick, who he's been like the voice of this independent industry, because it seems like it's really going that way, right? In a lot of ways. And that if a lot of independent producers want to come together and more Latinos, right, want to come together to tell their stories, mm-hmm. it's going to have to be more of like this independent avenue, yeah. right? Is that kind of like, is there something that for you see as like more of telling, because there was a quote, and I'm kind of getting to something here, but there was a quote that you said in your TED talk, which you were like, we have to be the, like, the Latino media coyotes and get in as many as possible, right? Because we don't really know. It's like, what are these Hispanic initiatives? What are these, what, and it's really just kind of up to us.
Yeah, no, I mean, you meet, I do a lot of cold calling to people that I like their work.
Mm. Kind of like I did with you.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, hey,
I was like, Flavio, hey.
I saw this video that you did, and like, what's your story? And it was like, you meet a photographer, or you meet a content creator, and do you know so-and-so? Like, should you know so-and-so?
Mm-hmm.
My wife's friend from college wrote the short story that the show B that was based on, right? And I was like, oh my God, like your friend Richard, you know,
did this.
And took him out to dinner. And I'm like, so who's your like rep? Oh, I'm not repped. I'm like, oh. So like I introduced him to a manager.
Nice.
And because once I read it, I'm like, your voice needs to be out there. And they just, you got very, very lucky. Right. Now you need teams. You need representation. Those are the, you can't just walk around town, right? And I've introduced a lot of people to managers and agents, like, just because, again, when you go up, you see people, when you come down, you see the same people. And you just want to, you know, make sure, but you also tell them, you give them homework,
right?
You gotta like know who is out there, who's available. You know, I've met a lot of people, it's like, well, I went to film school and I wrote this amazing script. And I'm like, how many more of these do you have? Well, this
just
is my,
one.
I'm like, yeah, bro. I'm like, it's hard.
And I don't want to piss off film schools now, but what I have so many friends and a lot of Latino directors, right, that I've known from New York or LA or whatever, that didn't go to film school, right? And it's not about not, I'm not messing with the film schools. I'm not saying don't go to film school, because there's structure and there's certain things you should learn, right?
But I
know so many that didn't and were and are working directors or writers.
There's a big shift, and it's funny, digital and tech, they don't hire college graduates, they hire college dropouts from MIT. They look for those first second years and then they pluck them out. And when I went to Telemundo, I dropped out of college. The head of HR at Telemundo would not agree to give me the full salary.
Because you were a dropout?
Because of college dropout. And it was, you know, this is 2004.
Okay.
Maybe 2005. And I remember the woman that offered me the job calling me like, I'm fighting this because this is wrong.
Right.
Like, why are you being penalized?
Right.
And she said the HR said a bad precedent. To others, for the company, for NBC, like, why are we hiring this guy?
But you could only really find that information if you dig for it. Like, did Flavio drop out?
Yeah, no, but it was hilarious because at the end of the day, the CEO called me. He's like, hey, look, I'm going to do this. I can't get away from this because it's gotten all the way to HR NBC.
Right.
But I'm going to give you what you're short as a bonus.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, okay, whatever.
Like,
even though it was triple what I was making before. So I was like, okay, sure. But it was really interesting because that's how backwards we are again with education. It's like, is the person good? Have they put in the hours? Are they able to do that? Because in tech, they're like, you're smart, you get it, we're gonna hire you. We're not gonna make these rules. So, you know, it's sometimes the hustle is as important as the diploma.
The regular life just experience, right? Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, like most of the directors that were, you know, coming from a music video background as a dancer, as a choreographer, a lot of the directors, not all, I'm not gonna say all, but a lot of that I worked with and would put out work that was getting millions of views, right? Didn't go to film school, you know, and are now on doing feature films and TV shows and all kinds of stuff. So, I agree. It's interesting that the tech and now we're merging tech with entertainment. And I always ask everybody about AI and like kind of like where that's going. And I know, I think just recently they dropped about there's a recording artist. It's like the first AI recording artist was signed and like the first AI actor was signed or something like that. Or there's an AI agency for actors now or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of getting scary at this point. But I get it. It's technology. We're at the helm.
Well, here's the thing, because I was one of those early critics that were like, oh, the end is the year. And then the more you start learning about it is we all better get versed in it. Because it's like you're saying, when it went from film to digital, people were like, never. And it's like, oh my God, I can shoot for days on this thing and whatever. And I think we just need to be smart. You're going to be able to use it as a tool. Mm-hmm. I've seen ways that now I can shoot a proof of concept science fiction project. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to do the story of like mom and dad crying at the dinner table because they haven't paid their bills as a drama, because like that's what I could afford to shoot.
Right.
Now I can shoot some crazy stuff, right? And so I think that allows our community to be able to push itself, because a lot of young writers, when they get into these writer programs, they're told, write what you know.
Right. Right.
And if you're coming from a difficult place, well, then you're going to show that. But it's like, write what you want. Right? Write what makes you passionate.
I just had a friend share like a proof of concept. Like, he took some sort of course or something. There's proof of concept of like some, like, you know, ancient film set in whatever, 1500s, wherever in the world. I don't know where it was. And it was just so, it was, because it looked like real actors, yeah, kind of. But it was at that level. And I was just like, oh, which is totally what you're talking about. Because it's like, he could be as imaginative as he, or creative as he wanted to be. Now, going back to what you said earlier about storytelling, you won a Peabody Award for My Country, Latinos in the Military. Uh-huh. And so, you know, how does that kind of influence now moving on? Well, tell us a little bit about that project, right? Talk a little bit about that. But does that what does that recognition mean for you personally, right? Like, how does that affect, like, now moving forward, other projects that you want to pick up and work on?
Yeah, well, that was during the time that we were at Mundos. Mm-hmm. And our general manager, Alex Pels, who used to work at MTV Latin America, said, hey, this is great that we're doing all this cool stuff, but, like, where are we going to get, like, something that tells a story of your audience? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I'm not a journalist. He goes, right, find one. Like, you're head of the program. Doesn't mean that you have to know everything, right? So Moises Velez, who worked for this, is a big Sundance nerd. And it's like, collectively, with another producer, Gloria Medel, we started sort of putting together the story of what is the Latino, not just the Latino history, but like currently, like where we are. And it was amazing the access that we got. We got to like the head of the Pentagon, who literally on camera is like, well, we're like any
head
other
of the Pentagon.
We're like any other business. You fish where the fishes are. Mm. So, I mean, it was story like why Army recruiters were trying to get into elementary schools to like get the kids to say hi to the soldier men.
Oh, wow.
And a high school in East LA had a waiting list for people to enlist. So they had to like create their own little recruitment group because they were so many.
Right.
And this is like, again, 2004. We had, you know, 10 years prior was the Iraq War. And just like, I think there was a need to tell the story. And it was pretty much down the line, because we had people that were like 3-4 generations of like, we're all Marines and our name is Gutierrez, and they're very proud of it. And we had a kid that was able to join the military to get his paperwork done, but at the cost of losing both his legs. And then the question at the end is like, would you do this all over? And he goes, yeah, I love my country. And we're like, oh my God, it's such a complex, no right answer type of thing. And when we got this recognition, it was like we got it from the whole company.
Wow.
You know, Jeff Zucker, who at the time was running NBC, called us and was like, hey, wow, this is great, whatever. Yeah. And what it did teach me is like, you don't need all the qualifications. You just need to surround yourself with people that can, right? And so that's sort of like, I may not be an expert, but I can find one and I can partner with them. And that, as a producer, I'm not a writer, I'm not an actor, not a director, but I know I have good tastes and I know how to put teams together. And as I always say, I'm like herding cats. And if I can align these cats to like walk in a single file, you know, it's good.
We could get it done.
Yeah.
And again, I just keep getting the sense from you. It's like, and you were saying somebody else that you just mentioned, you're like, oh, he's just like a Sundance nerd, right? It's like being a film film nerd, right? Like loving storytelling or and film, whether that's for television or like in the theaters, whatever. It's like there's like, and again, maybe it was the time, maybe it's the 2000, like.
What does VA mean to me?
A place for my daughter to call home, thanks to the VA home loan.
A new lease on life, the best healthcare team I've ever had is here at VA.
And education, and the opportunity to open doors I never thought possible with my GI Bill.
The financial support I need to manage the disabilities I develop because of my service.
Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
It's just these people that just love storytelling and, you know, filmmaking and the art of it. There was just this niche of people. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like everybody's either, it's not that it doesn't exist. It does exist, but it's just like everybody's so spread out now, right? And again, maybe it's because technology, right? We have so many ways to tell. You can put a movie up on YouTube or Vimeo or do it independently or Tubi, which I've talked to another producer about. And she's like, it's just a great rev share model for even early filmmakers that just want to say, hey, I put something up on Tubi, like, you know. And so, again, it just there's this sense of like having people that just they're so passionate about putting out good work, right? Like quality work, but also quality stories and changing narratives. Because I could only imagine, I'd be interested, can people still find that?
Yeah. And actually we're working, we're trying to work with NBC for them to release it. Like UCLA wants it for their archives.
UCLA, so. Go Bruins.
Oh, there you go.
Yay. I'm an alumni. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So that should be hopefully within the year. That'll happen.
Oh, awesome. Okay, great. Yes, please keep us posted. So, because we're winding down here, because I could keep talking forever with you because I have questions. I love Jenny. I love that show. RIP Jenny Rivera. You know, that was a big show as well at Mundos, as well as like working with other streamers like Netflix and HBO Max. A question that I ask most of my, all of my guests is, you know, calling this podcast Race of Your Own, right? Meaning sometimes in life you go up a hill, down a hill, you plateau, and sometimes you're just at a crossroads and it's just tumbleweeds and you don't know which way to go, right? What feedback would you have for, and this could be a pretty big question, but specifically because Hispanic Heritage Month, right? Latinos telling their stories, right? Anchoring in what the narrative is, right? And what narrative we're putting out. You know, what would you say is kind of one of the more important things for Latinos to keep in mind, especially younger filmmakers or independent producers, of like how to stay in a race of your own, especially because you've had such a big, solid career, right? And still do, like in storytelling and filmmaking and changing the way people look at Latinos. And the Hispanic community as a large, at least that's my, how I feel. You know, what would you say is some feedback in staying in a race of your own?
I think you have to, be passionate. Like it should be your, like my family makes fun of me because anytime we're watching something, I'll have a commentary about the business behind it or the actor or the actor's agent or manager or whatever. To me, it's like baseball. Mm-hmm. Like I love reading the back of baseball cards, right? Mm-hmm. And so like entertainment to me has always been about like,
stats.
Who are the players? And like, why did the company decide to do this in this direction or that? So it's like, find your passion. So if you want to be a storyteller through music, if you want, and then also there are a lot of jobs that go in that industry, right? And so, you know, my son graduated college. And the whole conversation is like of this vast area. He's a film and TV major. Mm-hmm. Like, where do you want to find your niche? And in the beginning, you have the luxury of like kind of picking and choosing and figuring out the place. Like, you know, like I said, I've dabbled in like 7 different careers, all within the umbrella of entertainment.
Right.
Trying to find it. Whether I was going to be producing commercials or a publicist or producing non-televised events, like, which is like really lucrative. And it really is, what is that thing that at the end of the day you don't regret spending 8 hours of your day doing? Mm. And I had periods where I was like, oh, I don't want to go to work, and I realize I'm in the wrong place, right? And that is a luxury, right? But I had all these other jobs leading me up to getting to do what I wanted to do. They weren't terrible jobs. They were just like things that I needed to do to gain the experience. I really always subscribe to the notion is, would you do this for free? Easy to say, right? But
right.
I think as you're beginning your career is like, what aspect of it would you be willing to like pay to do? Right? And again, finding that versatility, surrounding yourself with like-minded people.
It's a big one.
Right? It's like, you don't, you know, I my friends are the people that I kind of work with. And even those that I haven't, but I have worked with them before, you know, me and my friend Richard, you know, we're there for each other. You know, it's been since 90 and he's there. My friend Rafa, who I worked in Wine and Kennedy with, we still talk all the time. Yeah. You just find these people, and you just, you know, and it's also by your, where you are as a person, right? And you know, you go through your party phase, and then you go through like work only, and then you have your kid phase, and then you have your you know, and then you're married and like family. But I also, you know, I would not be anywhere without the support of my wife. So once we started dating, she was like, oh, this thing that you do is really important to you, and this is who you are. And even when she was like going to UCLA and
she's a Bruin. Yay.
And I was like working as a junior publicist, and I was like always broke. She was like, oh, but I was still doing illegal interns, and she was very supportive. She was my first cameraman at South by Southwest, my first cameraman when we went to New York, and has always been that foundational support to be like, this is what you do. And when I left Endemol, she's like, okay, this is the universe saying you need to start your own thing.
How important is that? How, again, a blessing. And it sounds like your wife really got it from the beginning, right? And understood what that world was like, and but also how important it was to you. I don't know. I just, you know, in relationships, we could go down that whole road. But, you know, having a supportive partner. No, I mean,
she always, like, you know, like every phase of my career she's been involved in.
And wanted to see you do good, meaning I'll be the camera person. If you need a camera person, I'll do it. Because how are you going to shoot it yourself?
No, it's like, always, you know? It's always been that. And she's always sort of played that supportive role. And I support her. And and then at times it was like, hey, I need to take care of your children. Like, you're okay now. Right. And now that they're older, it's like so cool to like sit with her and talk over ideas and projects and everything else. And I think that's also like, I tell a lot of people, like when you're finding your partner, they have to understand, either you have to understand their passion, and they have to understand yours.
Right.
This isn't a career path where you shut it off at 6:30.
No, not at all.
And I've seen a lot of people like, oh, you got to turn it off. And I'm like, sure, but everyone else around you is not.
Right. And healthy boundaries and, like, you know, mental health and all of it.
You're going up against people that have generations of lineage in this industry.
Right.
And they all have great people in the family that can do the business, and people that they got to find a job somewhere to put them in. And we are not first choice.
Right. Which is sad.
But
well, it's not sad in that sense, but it's just, you know, it's kind of like, that's just the reality of what it is, you know? So having somebody next to you that can understand that, but can coax you, you know, like through, you know, like, hey, it's all right. It'll be okay. Cause there's going to be ups and downs. And that's something that I've talked about on this podcast with almost all the guests. It's like the ups and downs, a lot of people in entertainment, but just in life in general, it's like, sometimes you're going to be so passionate about something, right? And so passionate about a project, I'm sure, where it's happened, it's like, dang, we didn't get that person to be attached, or we didn't get the recognition we needed, or maybe on that platform. So I think having somebody, family, friends, and people in the industry, like I said, it just sounds like in the industry you've had awesome an awesome peer group.
Yeah, no, it's really, really good people. All of, you know, Edmundo's, Diana Mogollon, who's now working for Dan Lin at Ride Back.
Nice.
Just someone that's always been amazing. Jacqueline Hernandez, again, mm-hmm. Telemundo, yeah. Ran People in Espanol. Mm-hmm. Just people that you can pick up the phone and, you know, sort of been like, this is frustrating, or like, is this happening on your end or whatever? And it's nice to be able to have those people, because then eventually they call you, hey, you should talk to so-and-so because they're looking for someone to do X, Y, or Z. And it's all about relationships.
But also on this end, being kind of more of the outsider, right? Looking in and hearing that there's still people in the background that, like, you know, value the Latino community, value the Latino story and heritage, you know, especially Hispanic Heritage Month, but like just acknowledge it, know what we're up against, mm-hmm. and are still willing to tell those stories, willing to push the envelope a little bit, feels good.
Yeah. Like, and you know, also, like, you know, I think it would be unfortunate for us to say that as Latinos, we can only do Latino things.
No. Yeah.
And so, you know, I from a very early age realized, like, I can do stuff in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's opened so many doors for me. And even now I'm producing Unscripted in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
As a ways to allow me to do English language scripted films. And it just, you know, you the one thing I do tell a lot of people is, like, there is no one road.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to keep the lights on, you have to be flexible within the boundaries that make you comfortable.
Right.
You know,
right.
And but there's always room for hustlers. And it's just a matter of figuring out, like, what's that business opportunity? Like I said, I didn't know anything about the podcast world. I immersed myself.
And here you are.
I immersed myself for 3 months and just, like, calling everyone that I knew.
Right.
Be like, explain this to me. Like, what is this thing? How does it work? And what are the benefits? Blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, okay, all right. Now I know what this is and how to measure it and be able to, like, figure out what the business models are.
Right.
And then you apply it to one of my consulting gigs and be able to, like, figure out, like, hey, there's a revenue model that we can take advantage of. And that's just, you have to always be learning.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Keeping open mind about it. Always. I don't think we ever stop learning.
No.
Ever. Ever. Thank you, Flavio, so much for being here. I so appreciate all your insight, all your knowledge, all of it. Thank you so much. And again, this is Virgie Rodriguez for A Race of Your Own Season 2. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, leave comments, ask Flavio questions, whatever. Just put it in the comment box. And we'll see you soon. Bye. Yay.
Wow, that was easy.